Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your life connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Hello, and thank you for listening to today's inspiration. I'm Lisa Berry, and I'm very grateful you are taking the time to listen, and I hope I can connect with you and inspire you and encourage you and uplift you. So this is what I know. This is what I've learned. This is my perspective after all I've been through in life, and it's all perspective. That's the number one thing I know. Everyone sees things differently, and feeling good, being happy, being content is a choice. And it might take some work, but how else do you want to live your days or pass the time on this journey we are all on right now on this planet? I was driving my son to work this morning and thinking, well, we work, we make money, so we can buy things and we can go places. But does that make us happy? I have come to learn that happiness comes from within. And no matter what you have or where you go, you are not going to be happy until you decide to be. And what else would you want to be? You can't be happy if you don't love yourself either. And that's difficult for other people to love you if you don't love yourself. So to me, life is about taking the time to getting to know yourself, finding out what your strengths are and what are your gifts, and then deciding what you want to get out of life. If you don't know, how can you get it? I ask people that all the time. What makes you happy? And they're like, I don't know. And I ask, what do you want? I don't know. Well, if you don't know, if you don't take the time to think about it, meditate on it, pray on it, whatever works for you to get that self-awareness that you need to live a happy life. I do see a lot of people, it seems like they like being unhappy. They're fueled by drama. I personally have had enough of that in my life. So I'm looking for a peaceful path. And I have a lot of love to share, and I want to share that with others and with you. I want you to feel good, too. After all, we only have so much time, and as I like to say, why waste life in angst and anger? We have a special guest coming up today who is going to definitely help us with that perspective, and I would love to talk to you. 646-378-0378 is the number to call, 646-378-0378. You can talk to me about anything you want or when our guest comes on in a few minutes, you may have some questions for her. Believe me, I'm here. I'm at this point because I have realized that stuff happens. I don't think I'd be in this mind frame if I hadn't gone through a lot of stuff in my life. And of course, I suffered and I was sad, but I am choosing not to stay in that place. I wake up every morning and I look and I hope for the best and I envision what that would feel like. It's just easy to dwell on what's wrong, but it's much better to me, to hopefully to you, to focus on what's right and how you can live a happier, more balanced life, because balance is really important as well. It begins with your own thoughts and your own attitude, and then you put those thoughts into words, and those words affect the world. They affect your own personal world and the world around us. So I do the show to share my thoughts in words in hopes that it will change or improve your perspective and help and change your life for the better, because what else can we do? How else do you want to spend your time other than as positively as possible? Speaking of which, I have an event coming up, and I would love for you to attend. Get your calendar. It's Tuesday, August 26th at 7 p.m. I'm very excited. I'm going to be kicking off a new series of personal development classes called Transformational Tuesdays, and my speech is Powering Through as Positive as Possible, which I just mentioned. Again, it's on Tuesday, August 26th. It starts at 7 p.m. And it's at a place I'm really excited to visit. I haven't been there yet, but it's called Soul Space. And the address is 210 West University Road at Pine Street. And it's in downtown Rochester, Michigan. So book your airplane and your hotel now. Or hopefully you live in the Detroit area and you're listening and you might want to attend. Again, that is Tuesday, August 26th, starting at 2 p.m. I will be giving a talk called Powering Through as Positive as Possible. It's part of a class called Transformational Tuesdays, and it's sponsored by Dean's List Publishers. My good friend Dean Latticer is putting this together, and its admission is based on the suggested love offering. I'm suggesting $200-$300. Just kidding. You don't have to give any money if you don't want to. Just come, and that will be payment for me enough. Though you can reserve a seat, and if you reserve a seat, they are asking for your love offering gift in advance. And you can get all the information at transformationaltuesdayclasses.blogspot.com. Or you can call Dean's List Publishing at 248-383-5555. 5793. Of course, you can, it's a lot of information I'm spewing out here, but you can always just call, email me at lisaloveberry, B-A-R-R-Y, at gmail.com, and I can give you the information. So again, that's Tuesday, August 26th. Starting at 7 p.m. in downtown Rochester, Michigan. I would love to see you there. And again, if you want more information, just email me directly, lisaloveberry at gmail.com. Well, I do the show to try and focus on the positive, to encourage people to live a happy, balanced, self-aware life. But not all of life is happy. And there are certainly many ups and downs along the way. And our guest today has experienced one of the biggest challenges a person can face in life, if not the biggest challenge in my opinion, but is, like I'm saying, our theme today, powering through as positive as possible, and has written a book to help others through her experience. So I want to welcome author and speaker Marilyn Sullivan to the show. And I also want to wish her a happy birthday, Marilyn. Are you with us? Oh, she may have gone to get a cup of coffee or something because I'm going to her a few minutes earlier. But Marilyn has written a book called A Patch of Comfort, A Guide for Helping Someone in Grief. And so we will be talking to Marilyn in just a second. Now, she has experienced something that none of us should have to experience in this life. Sort of similar to what I went through when I lost my sister from breast cancer at the age of 51. And I saw a great movie recently. It's called Wish I Was Here, written and directed by Zach Braff, who also stars in it. You may remember him from his long-running TV show Scrubs. And despite some criticism from movie critics, and they don't call them movie enthusiasts, they call them critics, so I guess that's their job to criticize, I loved it. I thought it was a really good movie, much better than I expected. But, you know, it had that scene, you know, the deathbed scene where a dying father finally tells his son that he loves him, which just really breaks my heart. Because what is going, good is that going to do? Why wait until you're on the way out to share your feelings with someone? And there was a great line in the movie, which also stars Kate Hudson, who I adore, who also in the movie loses her sister. And she says, on the other side of heartbreak is wisdom. So that's what we're hoping. Marilyn, are you there? I thought I heard her there. I don't know why I can't hear her. Marilyn Sullivan is our guest right now, and not hearing her. So talking about the movie Wish I Was Here, directed and written and starring Zach Braff, and I highly recommend it. If you're like me, if you're a deep-thinking, heartfelt person, and it had some laughs in it, too, so I was surprised. But again, I was just sad, and I don't know if it's kind of cliche that movies have these deathbed scenes when someone's on the way out, and then they decide to tell someone they love them. And I think we should do that way before the end, especially if you're a parent. If you have a kid and a connection, then you should be sharing that love at any time. Marilyn, I think I hear you. Or can you hear me? Huh. Okay. We'll still keep trying to connect with our guest right now. But again, the line that I really enjoyed from the movie was, on the other side of heartbreak is wisdom. And hopefully we'll be getting that from Marilyn as soon as we can connect with her. I also was talking to somebody recently, and they asked me, if you had a chance to go back and do it all over again, would you? And my response to that was, well, you know, you can never, I'm all about being in this moment now. You can't go back, can't worry about the future. You got to be in this moment now. But I have learned so much. And if I could go back, I would go and relive my life knowing what I know now. And I can't. So that's why I do the show. That's what I want to share with you. And what I've learned is, no matter how hard you try, how much you pray, how much money you have, or how many people you can call a friend, stuff is still going to happen in life. And it's not all good stuff. But it is up to you to decide how to react. And that's where I said I learned it's all perspective. And I personally have been through a lot of stuff in my life, but I wake up every day, and I wake up expecting something good to happen, and I try to envision it and feel like what it would feel like if it happened. And I always have hope and gratitude. Gratitude is such a big thing. It's, you can sit there and you can complain and you can think of the negative, and I try to knock those thoughts out of my head by thinking, what can I be grateful for? And there's always, I woke up this morning, that's something to be grateful for. I have a house, a roof over my head, I have health insurance, I have friends, I have the show, I have you listening. I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful that maybe I can touch your life and that we can connect in some way. And I walk around all the time trying to be aware of all my blessings and consciously being thankful for them. And then I feel that that opens me up to more possibilities and helps me realize the positive things in my life. That's what I want to focus on. And then I say, oh, well, what's next? I think I'm going to make a T-shirt. Oh, well, what's next? Now, it might take some time to get to that point, and we're going to talk about grief and grieving with Marilyn. Marilyn, are you there yet? She's not there yet. But ultimately, I do think it's a good coping mechanism to have gratitude. So don't dwell there. Don't live there. Pick yourself up and say, oh, well, what's next? Because even more stuff is going to happen. It's inevitable. It's life, and it's a journey. We're all on.
Yes.
Just trying to make the best of everything. Marilyn, are you
Hello?
There? Hi, can you hear
yes,
me?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, I've introduced you like 6 times already. But I appreciate you being on, and happy birthday.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Can you hear me now? There's that line. Oh, boy. Marilyn Sullivan is our guest. She's an author, and she's a speaker, and I'm hoping she can hear me. Can you hear me, Marilyn? Okay. We will still continue to try to connect with Marilyn, and we've got Courtney on the job, and hopefully she can help us out. Marilyn, can you hear me now? Technical issues. I live in fear of technical issues. No fear. No fear. We should have no fear. Marilyn, can you hear me now? Okay, I know she's there, and we will continue to try to connect with Marilyn Sullivan, who wrote a great book, and I'm excited.
Yes, uh-huh.
Can you hear me now? Oh, she must be talking to somebody else. For some reason, Marilyn cannot hear me, but I think she can hear Courtney, the screener.
Okay, at the same number?
Okay, I think
okay,
she's
got it.
Uh-huh. Welcome to the world of technical issues. And Courtney, I am grateful for you that you are working on this, and I know you're going to get it straightened out any second, because you know what? Ha-ha, I'm laughing enough. Oh, well, what's next? I'm not embarrassed. Are you? I'm sort of embarrassed. I'm mostly disappointed because we will get her back on any second now, and I don't want to waste your time. So I will continue to talk about what I have learned and how I have gotten to this point and how gratitude is a great coping mechanism. And, yeah, you got to take the time to move through sadness or grieving or disappointment. Just don't dwell there. Just don't live there. As I was saying earlier, people are just, they're fueled by drama. Some people seem to enjoy being unhappy. But I don't want to live my life that way. I've had a lot of issues that have gone on in my life, and that's not where I want to spend my time. That's not one of how I want to live my life. So it's a journey. We're all on this. We're all walking this planet together. We're just trying to make the best of everything. And that's why I love to laugh. I would rather cry. I would rather laugh than cry. I'm trying not to cry right now. I would rather laugh than complain. I would rather laugh than sit around and think about what's wrong with the world and what's wrong with everyone else. And I think it's a choice. I mean, as I said, you've been through some stuff. I've been through some stuff. It's good to grieve and get through it, but it's best to move on and then make the best of everything while you can. And Marilyn, can you hear me now?
Yes. Hi, Lisa.
Oh, finally, we've connected. Marilyn Yay. Sullivan. Yay. It's my guest. She's my guest. And as I do the show to try to focus on the positive, encourage people to live a happy life, but it's not all happy. And Marilyn has incurred what I think is probably one of the biggest challenges in life and has agreed to join us today. And first, I want to say happy birthday, Marilyn.
Oh, thank you, Lisa.
Thank you for
Another
spending
one bites
your...
the dust.
Yeah, well, you know what? We're still here, and that's half the battle, and I appreciate that.
That's right.
Marilyn has written a very special book, and it is called A Patch of Comfort, A Guide for Helping Someone in Grief. So let's get the hard part over with. Let's start with the story behind this book. What happened? What brought you to the place to write this book?
Well, I wrote the book after the death of my daughter, Erin. She died in 2005, and many grievers write to express their grief. The main objective for the griever is to get what's inside the body to the outside of the body, and there are many ways to do that, crying, throwing dishes, kicking the floor. I've done all of the above, and one of those is writing. So many grievers do write or journal and write in stream of consciousness, and I just wanted people to know how I felt and what had been helpful to me. And I wrote the first draft over a weekend about, I don't know, maybe 9 months after Aaron's death. And it took another 4 or 5 years for the book to kind of morph and evolve and become less about me and more about the reader, because my primary concern was to empower people who may not have had a tragic grief experience and empower them to know how to be helpful to someone in grief, rather than falling back on the classic, I don't know what to do and I don't know what to say. So to just share what had been helpful to me, to let other people know that there are things that they can do.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's grief, and we're all going to experience grief because we all are facing the same ending. But you experienced tragic grief, the loss of a teenage,
right.
The loss of a teenage daughter.
Right.
Where do you even begin to deal with something like that?
Well, you know, the main objective is that, well, say for example, you know, congratulations for me. Today's my birthday. I'm 61. And if I'm 61 and I say my father passed away, you can do some calculations and know, well, that he was probably in his 80s or 90s. And it was the end of a great life. And to ask me questions about how did he die? And I'm sorry about that. So that conversation can be a little easier. Now, when I say my daughter died, or if a gentleman in his 30s or 40s lost his spouse, or then it becomes tragic grief. It wasn't supposed to have happened. And so that's when people's questions get very personal. And just yesterday I had the question, how did she die? And it's people's natural response to gather information.
Right.
We live in a society where we are gathering information, we problem solve. How can I help you with this? Let me make it better. Let's improve on it. And we're proud of ourselves as a country for our technology and science and medicine, and those are all wonderful things that we do problem solve. But in grief, you can't fix it. You can't bring someone back. So there is no information to gather other than my daughter died. And with that information, I am hoping for empathy and kindness just from that piece.
But if you're someone like me who's all about compassion and empathy, as you said, and I hear that and I feel for you, what can I do for you? I mean, I think, as you said, we're information gatherers, so that's the first thing you want to do is, like, what happened? Is it okay to ask someone who's grieving what happened? Is there a certain amount of time
you
need to wait?
That it's a really terrific question, and let me use it as a teaching moment, because my response to that question has become, it's really difficult for me to answer that. And it is difficult for me to answer that. And one reason I want to say that is so that your listeners who are active grievers have a right to not answer a question that may be difficult or personal. And they also have a responsibility to educate those around them as to what they do and do not feel comfortable with. So that's on the griever side. On the one asking the griever questions, it's best just to confront them with a sense of vulnerability and powerlessness, and to let the griever say what they can say. And this is where we get into another social problem besides the one where we try to solve problems for people, is being silent. And that's really tough for people to do. You're sitting in the car with somebody you don't know very well, and you reach over for the radio because that silence gets awkward, right? So, so being with a griever in silence is actually very powerful because it messages many things. It sends a message of, you don't need to entertain me in order for, you don't need to say anything. I'm not just going to walk away. I'm here to be uncomfortable with you. I'm here to be sad with you. And to let the griever communicate what they're ready to say and allow them the opportunity to get what's inside of the body outside of the body. So that's really, especially in tragic grief, is the best avenue for that I would say to take.
We're talking to Marilyn Sullivan. She wrote a book called A Patch of Comfort, a guide for helping someone in grief after the tragic death of her teenage daughter. How many years ago was it?
Well, she died in 2005, so
okay.
My math isn't good. I think that's 9 years. But
9 years, okay. You've mentioned it a couple of times, and I'm interested exactly what does that mean. You said you need to get what's on the inside on the outside. What are you talking about, your feelings and your anger or anything and everything? What does that mean?
Yes. Grief requires change. And so the world as the griever knows it is becoming something different. And that changeover, that evolution is scary and painful. And the griever has hard work ahead of them, and it takes quite a lot of time. So in addition to approaching a griever with a sense of vulnerability and powerlessness, it also takes incredible patience because it takes a long time for their world to evolve and transition. I have had to create and continue to create a world without my daughter, which is very difficult. It's a totally different world that I live in than I used to. So the patience is a huge thing. People will think that, wow, it's been a whole year, hasn't it? But when you think about it, and I also volunteer to speak to grievers to remind them that that's not a very long time. Let's say it's been 5 years. Wow, that's a long time. But in grief, that's a very short time because it translates to 4 Christmases and 4 birthdays and 4 days where you're experiencing the death date again. So that's less than a week of your entire life. That's a little over half a week of your entire life after 5 years. So time becomes something very different for the griever. And for those who have not experienced grief, that's really a hard concept to connect with.
What happens if you don't get those feelings out? I mean, everybody processes and deals with things differently. So what if you are experiencing grief but you don't express it? What happens to you?
Well, there are certainly, I mean, I can take my own family as an example. The way I have processed grief, my husband has processed grief, and my daughter have processed grief are 3 totally different ways, which also makes comforting one another difficult, which makes those around them that much more important. But some people will really want to look at photographs and touch the clothes and wrap themselves in the clothing of the person that was lost, and they need all that contact to get it out of the body. Other people won't be able to touch or say or hear or have anything to do with that because it's so painful. So they're 2 different, completely different approaches. So the griever really does need to find an avenue where they can get that out. And I'm a big proponent of therapy and going to a grief therapist and having a place where, if it's family therapy or individual, to have a place to go where you are helped through talking out or crying out or getting out or yelling out your grief experience to get it outside of the body. It's very important, and it can really, for example, here's a great example. Our tears, when we're in grief, have stress toxins in them rather than the tears we cry when we peel an onion. So crying and getting the stress toxins out is really important, because otherwise the stress will increase if they stay inside the body. So when you're with someone in grief, allowing them to be sad, allowing them to cry, giving them permission, and saying, I'm here, I don't know what to say, and I don't know what to do, but I am here, and if you need to cry, that's fine. It allows them to heal, because they're releasing those toxins from their body. They're releasing words and articulating their feelings and learning about how to adjust to a new world.
So it sounds like you're saying it's very important to deal with it, to process those feelings, and to get it out. Because if you don't, it's going to manifest itself in other ways?
That's right. Yes. And we all know grievers who become bitter and where time never seemed to heal them. And that's a scary thing. And sometimes it's that they haven't been given the opportunity to have people help them, or they haven't been able to receive where people are trying to help them.
One story that you mentioned in the book that really touched me is when you said your husband asked you to stop saying, I'm going to run errands.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, my daughter's name was Erin, and he couldn't handle anything, and he asked me to stop saying I'm going to run some errands, because it just got to his core. And Aaron's bedroom became the den, and so that's really tough in a family situation where my daughter really needs to talk about her sister.
Mm-hmm.
And really wants to talk about her and remember her and share stories about her. So that's a process that's changed over time, of course, where we have helped one another process our grief in different ways and allow the other people to process their grief in different ways. Mine was a lot of changing my environment. I'm an architectural designer by trade, and so changing my environment was how I started changing my world. And the first Christmas, after Aaron died, for heaven's sakes, I redid the living room. And I got a new sofa, and I painted, and I had the hardwood floors refinished. And I think it was so that I didn't have to acknowledge it was Christmas.
Hmm.
Because the three of us spent some of December in a hotel room because the hardwood floors were being refinished. And I didn't want to put up a Christmas tree. And I knew that it wouldn't be the same, so I was going to make it as different as I possibly could.
And is that what a counselor would advise? Is that a good way to do it? Or is that just what worked for you?
That's just what... Well, I don't know if it worked or not. But it was how I was managing and processing my pain, and or changing Erin's bedroom. I was anxious to change out her bedroom and repaint it and that sort of thing. And, of course, all of those things were harder on my husband and my daughter, Katie. So where they weren't quite ready for that. So that's the tricky thing, where one family member may be ready to do something, may feel a strong need to do something, may want to, if they're ready to get rid of the clothing or whatever that belonged to the person, and someone else in the family isn't. So you really have to make compromises and work together to decide what will work best for your family and keep more people in mind. I think I was really off on my own tangent and not really talking it through with Mike and Katie before I went off and did things, and which was rather unfair. So that was, I probably could have handled that better, but that was something that I did to process my pain.
So grief is unique, and everybody approaches it differently, but what I'm hearing you say is it's important to at least deal with it.
Right, and you really hit the nail on the head, because part of our talks to grievers is that they understand how unique their grief journey is. And I even, part of that talk is that for me, my own example, that many mothers have lost a daughter, and many of those daughters were 15. But there's not a mother on this planet that knows what it was like to lose Aaron. My grief is unique to me, and that my husband grieves differently. And there's not a person on the planet that knows what it was like to lose Aaron as her father. And those are unique experiences. The relationship and the person are so unique that every grief journey is unique. And I tend to think of it as honoring the person who was lost, that the person was unique, that person was special. And the uniqueness of our grief journeys really honor that person as an individual. I had a woman the first year after Aaron died, ran into her in the grocery store, and she said, I have a cousin who had a friend who lost a son, so I kind of know what you feel like.
And they actually said that to you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah. Oh, I've heard them all. So it not only, see how it goes back to being powerless. She was trying to say, I know how you feel. No, you don't know how I feel.
Yeah.
She was trying to connect with me. She was trying to gather information from her past experience that she could process and internalize so that she could relate to me. So that all makes sense, right? But it also sends a message of your daughter's death wasn't special. Your daughter's death wasn't unique. I know other people that have that same thing. So that goes back to my original premise of approaching a griever with a sense of vulnerability and powerlessness, that I don't know what you feel and I don't know what to say, but I am here and I am happy to sit with you in silence and be awkward about it and wait patiently for you to have your brain work enough to tell me how you feel and to tell me what you're experiencing as best you can.
But see, I found that just to be human nature. I mean, you can walk up to someone and say, oh my gosh, my house just burned down. And their reaction 9 times out of 10 isn't, oh, that's horrible, how can I help? It's like, oh, I had a cousin who's, you know, people put it in their terms of themselves. So they're not necessarily thinking about you, who is going through something. So what are the best and the worst things to say? The best things or the worst things to say to someone who is grieving?
I do talk about in the book about how we're socially programmed to do the wrong thing. That not only does our society not really approach grief or teach us about the grief experience, but our social training tells us to do the opposite of what we need to do to help the griever, so that helping someone in grief becomes counterintuitive. For example, if someone is sad, your first response is usually to try to cheer them up, because that's an uncomfortable place to be, and let's all cheer up. Or if someone is angry, we want to calm them down. That's our natural response within those emotional situations. But a griever needs someone to acknowledge and be with them in their sadness, to acknowledge and be with them in their anger, and allow them to get those things outside of the body. And so tell me the original question again.
So what do we say? What should we say to them? Because I think that's a lot. I mean, I don't find a lot of empathetic, compassionate people. So let's help everybody. If somebody is grieving and you want to say the right thing to them, what do you say?
I think you have to not worry so much about what to say, but to make the attempt to do something. And it's based on who you are as a person. Let's say that you don't know them very well, or your son went to school with my daughter. Well, send a card, and that means a lot. Really small things matter to the griever. And the real kicker is that the griever already knows that you don't know what to say. And the griever already knows you don't know what to do.
Yeah, that is a good point to focus on.
The griever isn't expecting you to solve their problem. They're not expecting you to say something pithy and make them feel better. They know that if positions were reversed, they wouldn't know what to say either. So simply to have the courage to come up to them and maybe just take their hand or stand there in silence and maybe say, I'm so sorry, or say, I don't know what to say. That's a lot to the griever. It's really not a question of figuring out what you should do to have a plan of attack, and now I'm going to have this plan, and now I'm going to achieve this goal. Because it won't happen. There's no goal to achieve. You can't change the situation. You can only be present. You can only try. You can only send a card or see if they want a dinner brought over, or give to a memorial. And to make it about the griever, that's the other problem with our social structure, that we're waiting to find out that we did a good job, that we had a plan, that we made a nice dinner and we got a thank you note, and that we did everything correctly. But you have to make it about the griever. It's all about the griever. And they have no energy to write a thank you note. They have no energy or brain processing ability to even tell you what they need. So to be just present, or allow yourself to be accessible.
So if you're ever going to muster up some compassion or empathy, this is the time to realize that it's not about you, it's about the person who is grieving. I found it, people who haven't experienced a death at all don't know how much it means for you to show up at a funeral home or a funeral, or to send a card. You don't, I don't think you can realize that until you actually experience it for yourself. But it does make a difference. And if anyone's listening and knows somebody and hasn't experienced it themselves, be aware. And I think that's what Marilyn's trying to tell us, that anything can make a difference. Any act of kindness or empathy or compassion or showing of interest can make a difference.
Yes. It's very much small things matter. And small things are really huge to the griever.
I don't know if you want to take any questions. If anyone wants to call 646-378-0378. We're talking about grief, which is making me cry. And Marilyn's birthday, and I've already gone through two tissues, and good thing this is radio. But you do mention in your book, A Patch of Comfort, that you did try to take a slightly humorous look at this. I mean, you tried to have some antidotes or something that...
Well... Yeah, I did want the book to be about the reader more than about myself as the book evolved. And so that became a question of how do I write a book on grief that a person will read that isn't grieving, that doesn't need to read about grief. I have zero target audience.
Yeah.
So I had to do something that to let people know how important they are and how much those small things matter, to give the book some humor. There are cartoons in the book by Dave Heil, which are fabulous. And during the process, the book even went to an editor at one time, and she read the text, but she said she hadn't gotten the drawings. And I said, well, then you haven't read the book, because the drawings are the way that I chose to have someone who hasn't had a grief experience understand the feelings without absorbing the feelings, to not have to read a book about grief and absorb the grief experience. So the drawings are just out there to communicate the grief experience without there being words that have to be absorbed and processed into the brain about the painfulness of it.
Well, it is something that we are all going to have to deal with, and hopefully not tragic grief, but we are all going to deal with this at some point.
Right.
Now,
right.
A Patch of Comfort, and as I said, I love the cartoons and I do like the drawings, and there's a great picture of a woman under a quilt, and the name of the book is A Patch of Comfort. What does that mean?
Yes. Well, again, it goes back to small things matter, that to approach a griever as your individual self is just a patch and a great comforter, that your own personality, your own experience, if you're shy, if you're funny, if you're busy, if you're quirky, whoever you are, that's who the griever needs. And you're just a patch. You're not there to solve the whole problem. You're not there to make everything better again. You're just a patch and a great comforter. And that every patch is so important. And the griever is so appreciative of every patch. And the more patches there are, the bigger the comforter will be. So,
does the book talk about if you're grieving yourself, how to get through it? Does it go and talk about the stages and how to deal with it all? Do you address that at all in this book?
Well, surprisingly, the book has been found to be quite helpful to people who are in grief. First of all, it helps them know that they're not crazy, that their feelings are typical. And it does talk some about transition and transformation and getting what's inside the body to the outside of the body. So there are helpful hints. And I've also had grievers who are having trouble with family members or friends who are not being patient with them, who are being they will give them the book and say, here, this is what I feel like, and this is what you're supposed to do. Because they're saying, why aren't you better? And you need to get over this. And you should be back at work by now. Or so the book has actually been used in a variety of contexts. But it does have some examples for the griever.
Well, should you or could you be concerned about someone who seems to not be getting over, like, the loss of a parent or even the loss of a pet? I mean, does time heal? What is there a acceptable grieving time process?
Where the bell goes off?
Yeah. You're done.
You're done. Well, I would say, well, it does depend on the type of grief and the tragicness of the grief. Certainly grief by suicide, death by suicide, there are all kinds of
mm-hmm.
Of different things. But I blanked out again. What
no,
was
that's
I
all right.
Again?
So my big question is, does time heal? Does it get better?
Oh, well, that's where I go back to grief therapy. That if you're really concerned about the griever, that if they've been unable to have forward movement after the first year, that you should approach them about having professional help. Having professional therapy will help them move forward, because that becomes the underlying current. When you're first in grief, and I talk to the class that I have on for grievers about this, that even in the midst of their pain, they are moving forward. And I can confirm that with them because they're there.
Right.
They've gotten in their car. They've driven to a building. They've gotten out of their car, and they've gone into a chair, and they've allowed me to talk to them. And that is forward movement. So that's what you really want to see in a griever. And if you're not seeing any sort of forward movement after the first year, you should probably help them find a therapist. I've had to have friends push me toward that and dial the phone for me. It's very scary. And put me in the car and take me. So those are all things that are all those small things that require different patches that are things you can do for the griever.
In your book, A Patch of Comfort, Marilyn Sullivan, you talk about starting an elephant club. And I see elephants everywhere now, on scarves and purses and jewelry.
Yeah.
And what is an elephant club? And please tell me it's not the next step to Weight Watchers, because
the elephant club started. It was a group of women who are friends of mine, and when Aaron died, we started meeting monthly, and we had certainly socialized together before that time, but it became a regular venue after Aaron's death, and many of those women were like a second mother to Aaron. They were also grieving. Many of their children had been friends of Aaron who are grieving. And elephants, we came to that name from a friend who realized that elephants grieve together. And elephants, when one is sick, they go to each side of that elephant and help it move forward. And they shed tears, and they mourn, and they wait and grieve at the sight of the death of another elephant. And that's what we became. And I have a pretty good collection, you can bet, of elephants. And we still meet every month, and we go through life together. And we have all certainly have had other grief experiences and losses over the last 9 years. And we share those with one another. And it was a great help to me. I do talk about that in the book, how it helped me process time. To have something happen monthly helped me feel the advance of time when time gets really warped. And it allowed me to be silly instead of just grief all the time. How should I cut my hair? I had a hair intervention with my elephant club. And so it allows you to be sad or happy and to have a close group of friends that support you and help in forward movement.
How has this changed your perspective on life? I mean, a lot of reasons I do this show is losing my sister. Here, I'm making it about me now, who died at the age of 51. She was an attorney. She was a judge. She had three young children. And it taught me that life is precious, and I'm a moment saver, and I don't want to waste any moment. I don't want to be in angst and anger, and I've had enough drama in my life. My son went through a serious health scare, so I get it. Have you been able to get to that place yet? I mean, to lose a child, as I said, I think that's like the worst thing that can happen in life. So I understand that. But can you get that perspective? Can you move on to that place?
Yes. And I think that you and I can sit here and be examples of that right now, I think. That there's forward movement in our lives. And to my life has certainly gone in some other directions I had not expected. I never expected to write a book, that's for sure. I have more empathy for grievers, but again, I also have to catch myself because the minute I think, well, I know what to say, I know what to do, is exactly the time I do something wrong.
Hmm.
And I always have to go into a class of grievers or approach a griever, and I call it going back to zero, is just how I express it to myself. And to just be at zero and not have any expectation or think that I know what to say or do and allow that person to come to me from where they are, not for me to tell them where they are.
So writing the book is your way of moving forward.
It's certainly one way of moving forward, yes. I have since done the kitchen. So
we all have our coping mechanisms. For some people, it's shopping and
that's
cookies.
Right.
For
that's
others,
right.
It's redecorating. And,
yeah, just the kitchen. So there are many. I can see that there are positive things in my life. I continue to grieve for Aaron. I continue to
I mean, that's just probably something you can never really get over, but you do have to cope and get through the day and have
you,
gratitude.
You have those times where it hits you. Seeing a school bus is really a trigger for me, or hearing a school bus. It has a very unique sound when it stops.
Right.
That's what I heard at my front door for years. And that's really a trigger for me. But you just you move forward, and feeling forward movement is something I've really grown to appreciate, even if it's looking forward to having coffee with a friend, that looking forward to something, the small things matter, and looking forward to getting that thing I ordered in the catalog, or looking forward to something in the future, or rather than being tormented by the future, to feel a sense of moving forward into it.
It's hope and it's optimism. And as I said, I wake up every day and I look, expect something good to happen. And I hear you about looking forward to things. The name of the book is A Patch of Comfort, A Guide for Helping Someone in Grief. Where can we find it? And tell us about your wonderful website. I have website envy. You have one of the coolest websites I've ever seen. So how can we find the book and how can we hook up with you if we would like Marilyn Sullivan to come speak to us?
Oh, well, the website is patchofcomfortbook.com. And it's on there about the book, a trailer for the book, and how to buy the book. You can go to Amazon.com, certainly, or any bookstore. We'll order it if it's not in. So it's available anywhere, and any speaking engagements are on the website, if you so choose. So I've learned a lot about grief, for sure, and I actually enjoy, believe it or not, working with people in grief and people who want to learn more about grief.
Well, it's certainly healing and helpful, and that's what we're all about. Marilyn Sullivan, thanks for sharing your birthday with us today. I hope you it's all uphill from this because it's just a tough subject, and you've been through a lot. And I'm glad you wrote the book, and I'm glad you could spend this time with us today, and hopefully people will buy it and you can help others. So thanks again, Marilyn Sullivan, for joining us today, and happy birthday.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Sure. That's Marilyn Sullivan. She wrote the book, A Patch of Comfort, Dealing with Grief, a difficult topic for all of us. And we're all going to deal with it at one point or the other, tragic or, I mean, it's sad no matter what. I did want to remind you that I will be in Rochester, Michigan, August 26th. It's a Tuesday evening, 7 o'clock, kicking off a new series of personal development classes called Transformational Tuesdays. I'm going to give a talk called Powering Through as Positive as Possible. Starts at 7 o'clock, and it's at a cool place that I'm very much looking forward to visiting. It's called Soul Space. It's at 210 West University Road at Pine Street in downtown Rochester, Michigan. It's a series sponsored by Dean's List Publishers. That's Dean Latticer. He's a great guy, and he can hook you up. You can contact him at transformationaltuesdayclasses.blogspot.com, or you can call Dean's List Publishing at 248-383-5793. I know that's a lot of information. Here's what you basically need. Tuesday, August 26th, 7 o'clock, downtown Rochester, Michigan. We're going to have fun. We're going to connect. We're going to enlighten each other. And I'm going to give a talk called Powering Through as Positive as Possible. And if you need more information, you can contact me directly about this show, about the upcoming appearance, about Marilyn's book. My email is lisaloveberry, B-A-R-R-Y, at gmail.com, and I can help you with any kind of information. Also, feel free to check out any of my earlier episodes here on BodyMindSpiritRadio.com. I've had the privilege of talking to a lot of really cool people, Dr. Rudy Tanzi, to the Love Doctor, Terry Orbach, who can help us out with relationships, and I just think there's a lot of good information that could help you live a happier, more balanced life. And I look forward to connecting with you again next week. Thank you so much for listening.